You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Myanmar authorities have put restrictions on international aid entering the Rakhine region, where the Rohingya people are falling victim to a military campaign. The government has cracked down on Rohingya militant groups after they killed several border police last month. Aid groups have accused Myanmar of killing hundreds and burning Rohingya villages in retaliation. According to the latest United Nations estimates, 90,000 Rohingya refugees have crossed the border into Bangladesh in an effort to escape the violence. Amnesty International says the Rakhine state is on the precipice of a humanitarian disaster, and nothing can justify denying life-saving aid to desperate people. BFM reporter Connor Nell spoke to the executive director of Amnesty International New Zealand, Grant Bowden, and asked him why Myanmar was reluctant to help Rohingya Muslims.
It's really difficult to say. The Myanmar government is really guilty of some of the worst forms of human rights abuses by shutting out just such needed food aids, water and medical supplies. And really nothing can justify blocking those life-saving supplies to desperate women, children and men.
So the military obviously has this large-scale campaign that they're doing over there. Is this, considering that the military in Myanmar, Burma, have a long history of huge political control, is this campaign, from your understanding, being done autonomously by the military? Does it have, is it being commanded by the civilian government? Who's leading this?
Under the Myanmar constitution, it's the military who run their own operations. They're not controlled by the civilian government under the constitution. What we're seeing from the military is totally disproportionate response to some attacks that took place on paramilitary and police there, and really indiscriminate attacks that are hitting children, women, men alike, and people are fleeing for their lives. They're fleeing their burning homes. They're fleeing the country and arriving exhausted, starving, and traumatized in places where there's, you know, very little likelihood that they'll get a lot of support.
How does this humanitarian crisis in Burma compare to, say, the insurgency in the Shan state and those sort of bordering areas around China, where they had, you know, decades of armed conflict?
It's really difficult to compare, but where the Rohingya are in a really quite unique situation is the decades-old abuse and persecution that's gone on there. So they're not only denied citizenship within their own country, they also have restrictions on what schools they can go to, how they can move around, even who they can marry. And then they've been really ghettoized into these areas. They're not free to move around. And then now we're seeing people being systematically starved of food, water, and medical supplies. So what we're seeing really is the reason that the United Nations has described the Rohingya as some of the most persecuted people in the world.
Is this, you say it's a decades-old discrimination against these people. How far does this date back? Does this go, has it been going on for a long time? I mean, was this happening when the British were in Burma?
The Rohingya have been in what's now Myanmar for centuries, long before there was a country called Myanmar, long before there were borders at all. Really, we've seen persecution right since the formation of an independent state of Myanmar back in the 1940s. In the early 80s, that was really codified with their citizenship law that effectively shut almost all Rohingya out of becoming Myanmar citizens, despite it being their own country. And then in more recent years and decades, we've seen that persecution just ramp up and up and up to the point where life for many Rohingya is so intolerable that they make the agonizing decision to try and flee the country, which brings all sorts of other perils and dangers with it.
We've also seen sort of human rights figures like Aung San Suu Kyi, who've remained notably silent on this issue, considering her reputation for standing up for sort of democratic human rights and, you know, a free and fair society. Why do you think that is? And has Amnesty said anything on that?
Aung San Suu Kyi controls the civilian government. The civilian government does not control the military, and these operations are being done by the military. However, Aung San Suu Kyi has undoubtedly missed countless opportunities to use the voice that she has to speak out in support of Rohingya, to condemn what's going on. And it's been extremely disappointing to see that she hasn't taken those opportunities.
And what has the New Zealand government response to this crisis been? And more importantly, what are Amnesty International doing in Rakhine Province? And how are they coping with these restrictions placed on aid workers in the region?
So Amnesty International has been researching what's going on there. It's very difficult for us to get access into the trouble spots at the moment, but we have ways of getting research done by triangulating from other sources, interviewing people and so on. So for us, it's really important that the world still finds out what's going on there. In terms of the New Zealand government, that's really a question for them at the moment. I haven't seen anything publicly come out on this latest round of violence and persecution.
Sure.
But it may be that they're doing something behind the scenes.
Absolutely. Have you found in your work as well that, you know, have you gotten support from neighbouring countries as well in terms of getting people in and out, getting supplies in and out? So I'm thinking, you know, Bangladesh and India obviously have, portion of eastern India, they have large Rohingya populations as well. There's a lot of cross-border traffic, especially with refugees. Is that how aid workers are getting in there to help? Is it very kind of undercover and very sort of, you know, covert almost?
I'm not sure in the very latest situation there for aid worker access. It was that the UN Food Programme and other aid organisations were able to operate in Rakhine State. That's really been almost completely shut down now, which is what's led to a lot of the catastrophe that's going on. One of the things for the Rohingya is that they're really, really pretty friendless in the region because Myanmar is opening up. It has a lot of resources. It has very powerful friends like China. And there's really been a reluctance from countries to really speak out, to really hold the Myanmar government to account for what it's doing because of the resource bonanza and the investment going in there. Mm. Now, you know, what's clear is that people are suffering. We're on the brink of a humanitarian catastrophe in Rakhine State, and for the Rohingya right now, really the world needs to speak out.
Mm. It's sort of finally, just, you know, with this crackdown on aid workers by the military, what are the sort of consequences for aid workers captured that we're seeing? So, like, you know, say, you know, an aid worker is caught by the military. What are the sort of things they would face in captivity from the Burmese military?
Yeah, I'm not really able to answer that. We're still waiting on the latest information to come out since the restrictions on aid came out. Have been announced, so we haven't seen the practical implications of that in terms of the actual testimony from the aid workers of what's happening.
Okay.
So sorry, I can't give you a good answer.
But there's been no history so far in the region of aid workers being kind of held as political prisoners or sort of anything like that.
I'm not aware of any.
Okay.
No. Certainly, the Myanmar government has a lot of political prisoners. You know, routinely locks up journalists and other people who speak out.
Sure.
I'm not aware of that applying to aid workers as well.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.